First off, Annie and Dave, I must thank you both for coming in, because Annie, you've had trouble with the voice lately, and so we're lucky to get an interview with you at all, aren't we?
I think first we must thank you for coming in, because we haven't got anywhere, we live here.
All right then, but what's been the problem with the voice?
Oh, the trouble is that every time I wear yellow, I'm able to talk.
Really?
But if I don't wear yellow, it's very difficult.
A miracle cure, is it?
So today, I've put my special egg yolk impersonation costume on so that I could talk to you and the viewers at home.
Thank you. I see this one's going to be very easy indeed. Yeah. Let's go back a bit in time anyway. I'd like to talk to you a bit about your childhoods as well. What were they like? Were they quite conventional? Because you were both from provincial towns or provincial areas. Was yours particularly strict, Annie?
Oh, it was very strict. Oh, it was terrible. They used to have to, you know, they used to keep me behind bars and things like that. You know, they wouldn't let me out and used to feed me with haggis through the spaces between the bars. It was a very hard life, you know, being poor in Scotland, you know, living in a hovel and not being able to talk to anybody because everybody else spoke Gaelic and I was the only one who could speak English in the family. Mm. So it was very hard, yes.
Terrible. I see, terrible. I'm not going to get any more than that, am I?
Well, what else would you like to know?
Well, what it was really like.
Well, I was young.
Yeah.
Girl.
You usually are.
I was smaller and my hair was longer. And what else? Oh, and I used to curtsy a lot and point my toes.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you happy?
Yeah, I was moderately happy for a depressive.
I know more about this than she'll ever tell you.
She was happy.
You didn't know me then.
She was happy in the hen house, she used to tell me.
I was really? Very happy in the hen house.
Yeah, in her grandmother's hen house.
Really?
My grandmother had kept hens and lots of animals and things, and that was when Annie was the happiest, was when
yes.
She was feeding the hens.
I developed a unique form of communication with hens.
And it's left
which
a
I've
mental
kept
scar.
To
yeah,
today.
With the egg yolk
yes.
outfit and everything, it kind of links.
I'm getting paid extra for this. Dave, what was your childhood like? I mean, you've always been interested in music, but were you able to get into the other things that young lads like to get into, like sport and climbing trees and things?
Oh, we didn't get into the... Sorry. Yes, David, please, tell me.
Well, the only way I can describe my childhood is I'll tell you three short stories. And the first one was I remember running into the kitchen with a nest full of screaming little chickens, eggs, and saying to my mum, feed this, I'll be back in half an hour. That was one little story. The next time was, I remember in a tree house, making my little tree house in my own little world, and suddenly there was these about eight young guys who were poorer than our family, who used to call me Richie and things like this. And all I remember is looking at them, and the next one, there was a brick hit me on the back of the head, and I sort of fell out the tree and got carried home by a policeman. Another thing was my dad hired this fort in Alderney. It's a little island off the Channel Islands near Alderney, for a holiday once, a German fort, and me and my brother and our friends went there, and we pretended we were English soldiers all the time, and that was another instance. Anything else?
Well, I know that you were a keen footballer, weren't you, as a boy?
Oh, yes, I remember that. I used to play football all day long and all night, so much so that I got something wrong with my knee when this left back kicked me in the knee and broke my knee in places, and I had to have an operation. And then when I was in hospital, somebody gave me a guitar. And so I asked if I could buy a leather jacket, you know, so I sent somebody out to get one and I hung the leather jacket at the bottom of the bed and the guitar in bed and I plagued the nurses all day long. And I decided I didn't want to be a footballer anymore, I wanted to be in a pop group.
Really? Because you had a promising career cut out because you were on trial at Sunderland at one time, weren't you?
Oh yeah, I used to play for the school team and Sunderland boys and all these different things. But I was only pretending, really. I used to run around a lot. I never used to kick the ball. When the ball came near me, I used to, like, fall over on purpose. I still do the same thing on stage.
You've known each other for quite a long time now. Can you still remember...
I don't know who this man is.
Do you not?
I just walked in there. I've never met him, actually.
Can you still remember your first impressions of each other?
Oh,
what
God.
They were?
I've been trying to forget.
Have you? Why?
Well,
I mean, just have a look at him, you can tell, can't you?
He's talking yogi. Anyway, well, the thing was, you see, I was, I was...
Stop
I was,
it!
I was under the influence of something. I nearly got Annie the sack. She was working in a restaurant. And this friend of mine had said he knew a person who could sing great. And so I said, oh, let's have a look. And we were looking through this window of a restaurant. And the manager of the restaurant where Annie worked was saying, do you know these people? And she was saying, no, I've never seen them before in my life. And of course, we waited outside till she came out and we all went off together and she never went back.
Really? You thought he was an A1 fruitcake, though, didn't you, Annie, when you first met him?
I thought he was an A1 something. I don't know what.
I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Taurus and get this out of the way once and for all. They were a very successful band. I mean, they were having hit singles. Why did you want to leave and pursue something totally different?
Well, Annie and I didn't used to write songs in the Taurus days, you know, like one or two occasionally. And, you know, we got very misinterpreted because we did a very tongue-in-cheek version of I Only Want to Be With You, which was like, you know, it was a bit of a send-up, really. And Annie wore a little frilly kind of dress, and we did the whole thing like a kind of send-up, whereas the band was really, when you saw them live, was more like a cross between the Byrds or the Velvet Underground or something. And it got so big, that single, in Australia and England and lots of places, that everywhere we went, obviously people thought we were a 60s kind of revivalist stroke cabaret band or something. And in fact, Pete, the main songwriter, couldn't handle it at all. He just completely made him want to leave and stop, and the same with me and Annie. So one day around a swimming pool in Bangkok, we all said, we've had enough of this.
Did it scar you, that experience, Annie? You know, it was your first taste of success.
Oh, I was scarred.
Were you really?
Scarred
inside?
Well, you can't see it, everybody, but I was scarred. Deeply hurt, I was.
Really? But were you?
Well, I had a nervous breakdown, you know, but that was easy, you know. I just took a few aspirins and the next day I was all right.
She did, actually. I was there at the time.
You're surprised.
When I was into drug-taking or that thing, I was very poor, so I couldn't have been, like, I might have wanted to be involved with the glamour side, but I was more sort of crawling around on the curb.
I think the glamour is such a myth, a complete myth, you know, really.
The thing is, my career was very strange because I was launched by Elton John when I was about 17, and in that way, you're right, you know, the first album I ever had out was like a fortune was spent on the launch of it, and there was like brass bands to meet the train full of press that got took to a little place in a village somewhere, and it was all completely over the top. And in a way, it was good that after all of that, I went into the depths of despair, really, because like when Eurythmics became successful, nothing like that interested me at all, you know. I mean, I'd seen all that when I was about 17, and I could see then that it was all just like empty, you know, there was nothing to it, really.
I'm coming into my glamour phase now.
Yeah.
Why did you feel the need to take drugs then, Dave? I mean, how did you get into that subculture, if you like?
I didn't really felt that I needed to, I just wanted to, you know, I just liked it. I liked being in a different reality at the time and didn't like the reality when I wasn't in it. Of course, after a while, you know, when you start getting addicted to things, then the reality that you didn't like, you know, your reality that you're in under drugs becomes your normal everyday one. And the more and more you take, whenever you start, you know, going into the other reality and the drugs are wearing off, then it becomes more and more horrific. So I'm really pleased I don't take them now.
Was it difficult pulling yourself out of that?
Well, I kind of got myself pulled out of it involuntarily, really, because, I mean, I ended up in car crashes and hospitals and all sorts. I mean, it was virtually like, you know, I had to stop taking them, otherwise, you know, I would die, really.
Did you know Dave at this time, Annie?
Towards the end of it, he was coming out, I mean, he was crashing into the wall when I met him. Sort of pulled him up by the scruff of his neck, slapped him around the face a few times and said, "Stop it," didn't I?
Was Annie a good therapy for you then, Dave?
Actually, it was great, yeah. I mean, you know, it's funny because we've influenced each other so much throughout the 8 or 9 years in all sorts of ways. I mean, yeah, Annie literally saved my life and stopped me in that kind of way. And I completely wrecked hers in return.
Oh, he's wrecked my life.
Not really.
Oh, yeah, it's terrible.
In some ways.
So, as the Eurythmics unfolded and as your careers developed, you became lovers, and was it difficult, like, being lovers and working together?
You said that really quick. Say it again slowly.
What did we become?
You became lovers.
Oh, yes, we were.
I remember that.
Let's get romantic for a minute. Was it
I'm getting
difficult?
Romantic.
Oh, it was also terribly sad, wasn't it, Dave?
Do you remember, Annie? The nights we spent alone. Yes, what were you saying?
No, no, carry on, please. The crew are all in tears, yeah?
So am I.
No, I just wondered how difficult it was at that time. I mean, it must be...
Difficult?
Difficult. Working together.
Oh, I see.
And being lovers. I wouldn't dream of delving into your sex lives like that, don't worry.
It wasn't all that difficult, really. I read a book.
It was very easy.
Book or two.
Both read the Kama Sutra.
Yeah.
Did you?
Yeah, absolutely.
Gosh. Now, go on, tell me. Please.
Don't be nosy, it's personal.
First you get a pulley system, right, and you set the pulley system up, and once I knew how to operate it, I'd be sort of hung by my leg. The usual stuff, you know.
Okay, I want to talk to you a bit about your early time with the Eurythmics. Mm. When you were maybe messing about with that sexual stereotyping, Anna, you know, the whole bit about dressing up as a bloke and not going down so well at the American Grammys, as I understand it. What was the motive behind that, though?
An extreme perversion on my behalf, I think, really.
The thing is, the reason why we laugh and things and talk sort of a bit candidly about that is because we both are very strange, sexual, deviant kind of people. And so as soon as you mention the subject, obviously, we're going to crack up because, you know, if you could see us at home in our private lives, you'd know what you mean. I mean...
Can we pop round and maybe bring the boys round, bring the crew in?
There's no need to do that. I've got it all on film.
You have anyway,
have you? Has offered me a few thousand under the counter and no questions asked.
I see.
Oh, I don't know what we had for breakfast this morning.
No, the thing is, right, Annie decided that you didn't want to be seen on stage like a girly, you know, kind of singer in a frock or whatever, and all the guys sort of just seeing her as that kind of person when she's a real character and a character performer. So she started just wearing loose kind of men's suits or whatever on stage so that she could move around and sing. And of course...
Sort of, but I think the first reason was because we wanted to be twins, didn't we?
That was right, yeah. Oh, God, this is going to get more perverse. You see, we decided that we should be twins, really, because we were suffering from a disease called folie à deux. Have you heard of that?
I'm about to, no. Carry on.
It's the madness of two people who become so close that they can't speak outside of their own situation, you know. We'll demonstrate some. And people used to find it really weird when they met us, so we thought we might as well go the whole way and be sort of the Gilbert and George of the rock world. And so we did that, and the Americans found it very confusing. And as soon as the Americans find things confusing, you either get loved or hated. So boy George got loved and we got hated.
But in fact, Love is a Stranger went down very well over there, didn't it?
Well, I mean, we are very successful over there, but that's only because people are very worried about us. And if they don't make us successful, I think they might be missing out on something.